So I'm sitting there beside the ATM, opposite the Swan in Rathmines, with me styrofoam cup. And this redneck blue bottle looks down at me and says, "I'm arresting you for begging if you don't get the fuck away from that ATM." And I say, "Is that the first thing that occurs to you to do when you see an Irish bank ATM? Arrest the guy begging beside it. Do you realise how fucked up that is? We, the Irish people, are paying 43% of European bank debt because of the crimes of the people who run that ATM. So there's no host in your tabernacle, yeah?" Now this gets the blue bottle agitated. Says he'll fucking pepper spray me. So I stride away like a member of the People's Front of fucking Judea, brushing me shitty sleeping bag against him as I go. All he sees is a crusty leopard that needs clearing out of the way of the smooth running of the gaff. My glittering irony runs off him like piss off a smooth wall. "Come here to me," he shouts. "I'm not finished with you yet." I let on I don't hear, but he's after me. And I start to run down the Rathmines Road, but he's young and blood up and he's catching up on me. He somehow stamps on the tail of my sleeping bag that's become, by some fucking weirdness, an ancient cloak stretching way back up the road behind me. It's the clobber of fucking history I'm always dragging along. The nightmare James Joyce was always trying to awaken from. And this gobshite's after making it manifest. Fuck knows how. I fall back in slow-mo, choking, as the Angelus bell of Rathmines Church rings out. And I recite James Joyce's thunder word from Finnegan's Wake as an incantation to protect me against blue bottle aggression.
Ba 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 da ga ra ta ga min a run come run ton a run twan ton to va how non's gone to who da net a look.
A blue bottle's shitting himself. He thinks I'm after putting some kind of satanic curse on him, which allows me a split second of respite to ponder the following. Clip-clopping along to Glasnevin. Clip-clopping along to Glasnevin. Just a crate on a cart from Portobello Barracks to Glasnevin Cemetery. "What's in the crate, mister?"
"Head down. None of your business."
I fall back further on the shitty sleeping bag of history, grappling with the perennial blue bottle as the Rathmines Town Hall chimes 10 o'clock. It's the 26th of April, 1916, the Wednesday of Easter week. A volley of shots rings out in Portobello Barracks, Rathmines, and another volley a minute later. Frank Sheehy Skeffington is dead. A chorus of hundreds of thousands of Irish voices roars, "Frank who?" Frank Sheehy Skeffington. He's fucking forgotten, ignored, ridiculed and laughed at. And why? Because in Dublin in Easter week 1916, James Joyce's best friend, the little atheist he therefore couldn't resist calling Hairy Jesus, was trying to stop the looting. Isn't that a good one? Thousands putting their life on the line, occupying buildings all over Dublin and firing shots all around them for the freedom of fucking Ireland. And Skeffy was trying to stop the looting. What a fucking age. A total bloody gobshite he must have been. Here's Harry Jesus's cross and passion. Francis Sheehy Skeffington in the Stations of the... Not the cross, no, the Stations of the Crank. First station, Liberty Hall, Dublin, noon, Easter Monday, 1916. The illustrious occasion is about to commence. James Connolly musters the Citizen Army and the Irish Volunteers. The cause of Ireland is the cause of labour. And the cause of labour is the cause of... Frank Sheehy Skeffington, hanging around the edges, being sworn a bit, shouts, on a point of order, by whose authority has this armed alliance been convened? I push him into the back lane till Connolly gives the order, and off they march around the corner to the GPO and into the history books.
James Connolly, friend, comrade, why do you deny me?
On Palm Sunday in Liberty Hall just a couple of weeks ago, we cheered for Skeffy! Skeffy! If we had palms, we'd have laid them down at his feet. Beside James Connolly after their double bill of plays.
In Ibsen's play, A Doll's House, the heroine Nora goes out the door to an indeterminate future. In my pointed comedy, The Prodigal Daughter, Lily goes out to campaign on the steps of her local church for votes for women. That's revolutionary action!
Connolly clasps him as if he's going to kiss him. Then he cites his own play. Under which flag? Whether to fight for Britain or Ireland?
There are guns in the hands of tens of thousands of Irish men in the British Army in Flanders. Why not guns in our hands in Dublin City here today?
And a company of the Citizen Army marches in the door, and everyone cheers as the men and women drill on the floor. Skeffy walks slowly off the stage, leaving Connolly to talk about
channeling the rage to make the maximum impact.
Second station, City Hall, 1 p.m. Easter Monday, 1916. A soldier gashed open at the side of City Hall. Skeffy to the chemist on the corner. A bayonet accident, terrible mess. Skip back with bundles of bandages clutched to find the soldier's been dragged inside the gates of Dublin Castle. Cross! Fire! Skeffy flattens up against the door. Lucky he never put the weight back on after the hunger strike last year.
Silence in court. Francis Sheehy Skeffington, you are found guilty of sedition for making 40 speeches against recruitment to His Majesty's Armed Forces.
Damn your war! Any sentence you pass on me is a sentence passed on British rule in Ireland.
You are sentenced to 1 year's hard labour.
Long before the expiration of the sentence, I will be out of prison, alive or dead. Damn your war!
Mountjoy Jail.
Sean McDermott, volunteer leader, you here too, for an anti-recruitment speech. Good man, sure one is a start.
We'll hunger strike while the iron is hot. A long hunger strike would threaten recruitment for the war. They'll release us before the week is out. The price of freedom is hunger. My wife Hannah did it for votes for women 3 years ago. Why should it be left to women alone to hunger strike for rights? Now, stop even thinking about eating. Day one. Day two. Day three. They say day four is the worst. And the days move slower, and the nights lie still. The crows outside Mountjoy are deafeningly loud, and the lovers walking home along the prison wall roar their sweet nothings as if they're in the cell. Day 6.
Escalate to hunger and thirst strike.
Day 7. Day 8. Surely they're not going to just let us. Door opens. Set free. On a Sunday to avoid publicity. Trousers won't stay up. Button them to the waistcoat. A car. I'm fine. Absolutely fine. The chug chug. Outside the garden gate. Little Owen runs to meet me. I try to say Owen, but I just manage O. Hannah helps me walk the path. Step in. Dizzy. Sit. Water. And a little piece of toast. Wet it till it softens. Slide it down the throat.
Third station, O'Connell Street, 4 p.m, Easter Monday, 1916. Hannah in a rush to the GPO. Frank says,
"No, my place is on the outside. I won't join in."
Frank, we're officially citizens of the Irish Republic. The proclamation guarantees equal rights to everyone, men and women. What we've campaigned for is achieved, worth celebrating.
You go so, Hannah. Take care and don't stay long. The response will be sudden and when it comes, it will be strong. Hannah.
Anna?
Coming up to Christmas 1900, the wheezy doorbell clangs, and I enter in my jaunty new plus fours. I'm a different kind of student, come all the way from down, my knickerbockers scream. James Joyce giddies in behind me. Get out of me way, hairy Jesus. He makes a beeline for the wines and the continental cheeses. Hannah and her sister Mary, she lead the charades, but Joyce soon brooms into Greek mythology. He pretends he's Aphrodite, stepping from her clamshell. He coyly covers his peewee. I become one of Botticelli's three graces. Twee, with Hannah and Mary. Hand to hand we twirl, nimble nymphs so fay. I see us nude with our berry food at hand. I sway my beard from side to side to the roars of the loudy crowdy knickerbocker kick. Hannah's haunches and hips sheer. I try not to leer. And a pearl hangs from her neat vermeer. Hannah focused, gaze straight. No jokey, pupils dilate. Oh. Fingers touch the slightest stroke. Oh. I cough, trip, nearly choke. Hannah. Hannah.
But I won't follow you into the GPO for a gun-toting tete-a-tete with McDermott and Connolly. They've consigned me to the outside. So be it. Shop windows shatter up the street. People wearing fur stoles and silk top hats appear.
Would you look at the state of me now? Would you look at the state of me now?
Marooned in no man's land. They call it the Rock of Futility. An isolated shore where no rain falls, where no wind blows, where no bird calls, where no plant grows. Stillness. In a sea of cobblestones and glass, men I knew chiseling loopholes in brick and rolling gigantic wooden print spools for barricades while I stand stuck, tied in the idol of futility. Fourth station, Grosvenor Square, Rathmines, 9 p.m. Easter Monday. Silence. Huff. Owen put to bed. Hannah, stuff to discuss. Her brow knits, her cheeks puff. You knew the rising was to happen and you didn't tell me. Pause. Moon. I was sworn to silence, Frank. But not to me. Yes. Especially to you. By whom? By James Connolly. Why did you agree? He asked me to be one of 5 members of a civil government to be declared if the rising leaders are killed. A woman in government, Frank. First time ever. Even if it's theoretical and anyway only nominal, but still significant. Betrayed? Too strong. Distrusted. Too weak. Kept out of the action. Why? Too meek? I feel like a little boy at my father's knee. The school's inspector, educating me at home, manipulating my influences until I broke free. Connolly couldn't look at me today. Now I know why. I'm sorry, Frank. Not enough. Silence. Off. Going home after that 1900 Christmas advent. I stick a sprig of cherry blossom in my hair. Is this love, Joyce? What do you think? He says, a poet must write tragedies, not act in one. I'll act in the comedy, the tragedy, the work, the play. Whatever life love makes it, come what may. Lie of, I will lie of. Joyce found his way to lie of too. Went east with his Galway chambermaid. Still together, last I heard. He's put me in his book. A boring character called McCann, full of his own conceit, who eats chocolate. Hannah likes chocolate. The early days. Hannah the light and Hannah the word. Me the pacifist, pen, not sword. Oh, the debates, the teasing out, the to's and fro's in the basement cellars and rooms and back bureaus. Them was days. Hannah. I will lie off. She had me sent to America after my Mountjoy slimming escapade. It was lie off made it happen. Her lie off for me. She put me out of the way of the cat and mouse act. Or I'd have been in and out of Mountjoy like a jack-in-the-box, an inch or two thinner each time. Stayed with Joyce's old friend, Byrne, of 7 Eccles Street. Nice place he has in Brooklyn. He's made a new life, full of bustling activity, of the peculiarly Irish kind. I went out and met the Wobblies. Socialists, communists, anarchists, feminists, suffragists, and the black rights folk. But John Devoy of Clonegail had me shunted out of harm's way at every hand's turn with my naive, divisive views. By his cigar-toting, wide-brimmed, double-breasted cronies. Let's hear a song from the old sod, sentimental baloney. Not one Clonegail platform did I grace. Traded funny stories with Byrne about Joe Cax Joyce. He kept me sane. It felt futile pretending I was there at Clonagail's invitation while they pushed me out of sight with fervent application.
Hiya, Frank. Let me tell you a story of Johnny McGorry. Will I begin it? That's all that's in it.
Back here for Christmas. Little Owen grown a full inch taller. He's taking after the other side. A rifle shot. Not too far away. An old geezer told me someone's in the bell tower of Rathmines Church sniping into Portobello Barracks. Wait till tomorrow comes. A response will arrive in time. The bells will chime as the bullets rain. Will it all be in vain? Will we end up stuck back in Joyce's societal paralysis again? He'd probably think so. But I don't know. At least they've made a mark. Put out a shout. How do I participate civilly? In critical, if not support, at least understanding, without becoming a willing party to military action. There's not much room for a minority position. With us or against us, this is the defining time. It's happened, and it must be dealt with.
Fifth station, the Irish Women's Franchise League office, Westmoreland Street, Dublin, 5 p.m, Easter Tuesday. Frank on his hands and knees, charcoaling big squares of paper. No looting by order. Anti-looting committee. Armbands and walking sticks piled high in readiness. Hannah rushes up the stairs. Time to go home, Frank. Things are spiralling out of control.
Well, your confidant Connolly has said organise, educate, agitate for years. Then he starts training and drilling in the use of guns and talking about our gallant allies, the Germans, as if they're somehow less imperialistic than our own John Bull, when, if anything, they're arguably even worse in their treatment of Africans.
Frank, our friends and comrades have held the centre of Dublin for 30 hours. Is that not a matter of considerable joy?
If it's joy, it's a dangerous joy. All I can do is try to stop the looting so it doesn't look like hooligans run amok. That's the only role left open to me now, thanks to Connolly and you.
Frank, what's the name of the magazine James Joyce's novel has been appearing in? I forget, we laughed at the funny title. Remind me.
The Egoist.
The Egoist, yes, that's it. We all must be careful not to think, as James Joyce did and presumably still does, that the universe revolves around us. A historical event is taking place in which you're not at present playing a central role, but in which you will in time. That gunfire we hear is the sound of challenge, not compliance.
But it's challenge the old way, the same methods of armed aggression and blind obedience.
Where there are guns, there must be obedience.
This is futile. There's nobody coming for my anti-looting committee meeting because they think I'm a bloody buffoon.
That's what your dad called you when you resigned as registrar of the university a decade ago. Son, you're a bloody buffoon, JB said. And we had a bloody buffoon party. And all your friends came to congratulate you on your principled stand. Reenact it, they said, and I did. What is it, Father Delaney? Frank, the registrar is well paid to uphold college policy. I can't uphold the unequal treatment of women as if they're somehow less human than men.
Frank, there's no future in being written off as a crank.
A crank is a small instrument that makes revolutions, says you. I resign. Frank, my crank? Hug?
Not by a long shot, Hannah. Not yet.
I still love you no matter what you think.
A funny way of showing it.
How long will you keep this up? I'm off home. Don't dilly-dally. Time to call it a day.
Sixth station. Kelly's at Portobello the first time. 6 p.m. Easter Tuesday, 1916. I'm Dixon with a cheque for a tenner in advance from Kelly, the Crown Loyalist Councillor Publican, who wants me to print and post up on walls the King's Proclamation of Martial Law issued today telling everyone to go home or get shot. Kelly's been fleeced of his stock of cigars and fine wines by the tenement dwellers out the back of his premises. I go running around trying to knock up every bloody printer I know, and it's getting a bit hairy. I'm scaring them because I haven't a clue where the rebels are, and soldiers are making sorties out of Portobello Barracks. When who do I see walking up the middle of the street from town with a bucket of paste and a brush and a load of posters, but the man I used to report on for making seditious speeches, Frank Sheehy Skeffington, hairy feckin' Jesus.
No looting, he shouts.
Sure, everybody laughs and jeers. Leave him alone, a fat vintage wine guzzler says. He fed my childer during the lockout. Hairy Jesus is all right.
I don't care whether you think I'm all right or not. Citizenship has its duties as well as its rights, and one of them is to prevent theft.
So what are you going to do about it?
Someone says.
What'll I do? Well, I may be 5 foot two, but I'm not afraid of you or anyone else who threatens my right to public protest. I'm going to put up these anti-looting posters. You don't want to be like the traitors in the temple. You know what happened to them. Whipped and run out of it.
Yeah. Holy Jesus through the head, but you're not holy. You're Hairy Jesus the Atheist. I'll give you a hand, I say. Give me your posters there. I take them and I walk up towards the canal bridge.
Where are you going?
He shouts. 7th station, the checkpoint, 7 p.m. Easter Tuesday, 1916. We just secured the canal bridge when we saw a crowd approaching. This man has been putting up rebel posters, says the first. What do you have to say for yourself? I say to the small man.
My name is Francis Sheehy Skeffington. I'm a militant pacifist. I'm proud to say I've been jailed for it. But those are not rebel posters. They are anti-looting posters. I believe that property, as well as having its duties, which it is often loath to perform, also has its rights, until such time as democratic due process might decree otherwise.
Short bursts of gunfire a half a mile away.
Take him in. Martial law has been declared. No one in the street after dark. I fire in the air and off they scatter.
One small boy of about 8 years of age is smoking a giant Cuban cigar. He gives my men a puff of it and they have a hearty laugh as they trudge back up to the barracks, prisoner in tow. 8th station, the detention cell, Portobello Barracks, 8 p.m. Easter Tuesday, 1916.
Guard, could you ask someone to get a message to my wife? She's in the garden flat in 10 Grosvenor Square. Not far, 10 minutes. Maybe the little boy who followed us in with a fat cigar would run around. I can hear him coughing his lungs up. You can't miss it. It's got a big damn your war banner stuck in the hedge outside. I know there's a human being residing inside that uniform. And I know he has a pair of ears and brains to comprehend. And empathy enough to know that there's nothing seditious about wanting my wife and child to know I'm safe. Just ask the little boy if he'll do me a favour and my wife, Hannah, will give him something nice, like an apple or maybe a date. I think there should be at least one left in a box on top of the long press. And perhaps you'd ask him to tell her I love her.
9th station, the guard room, 8 p.m. Easter Tuesday, 1916. 7 of us interrogate him and he doesn't flinch. You are carrying rebel posters, admitted.
The posters are nothing to do with rebels or anything but me and the organisation I set up today called the Citizens Committee Against Looting. That means me. I am the Citizens Committee Against Looting because no one else turned up. I intended to put up posters, but it was too dangerous, so I decided to go home. I was not pleased, as I like to be at the centre of things.
I saw two priests attack you in Kingsbridge Station a couple of years ago.
Yes, but they said I was doing Satan's work by bringing some workers' children to be fed in the safety of Kildare for the duration of the lockout.
When the children tried to stop the priests from kicking me to death, this was taken as proof I was indeed the devil's advocate.
I was the one who picked you up.
Were you? Well, thank you, belatedly. I survived, as you can see, thanks to my padding.
Padding?
My father's cricket padding, fitted to protect the stomach and kidneys. I wear it under my clothes whenever I'm at risk of a clobbering.
You wearing it now?
Yes.
That's rebel uniform. Military apparel. We have spent 2 years risking our lives and the lives of our men, many horribly slaughtered. And you prance around in your homegrown uniform and stab us in the back. Lieutenant, strip this hairy Jesus of his rebel robes.
An order is an order.
When it's all stripped off and the stupid bits of cork are scattered on the floor, he stands there, covering his willy, like Aphrodite in her fucking clamshell. So I bend him over while we kick his legs apart and we get him to sing God Save the King, but he won't, so we have to make him.
The three graces twirl with their berry food at hand. There's Hannah bringing sacks of flour to the rebels at the back of the College of Surgeons. Hannah, remember the time we went up the mountains to Tobraden and lay down in the grassy gap in the secret clumps of heather and looked at the smoky city below and pointed out the landmarks, Rathmines Church with its big green dome and the Wellington Monument in the Phoenix Park. And my Ibsen one, you laughed, up here in the Freudian heather. And there's James Connolly tucking into his rations in the GPO. James, the meeting we spoke at during the lockout was broken up. We lashed the reins of the horse and a platform we spoke from took off through the lines of police. Giddy up, how you laughed. Frank and James, James and Frank. And there's James Joyce in Zurich, regaling his companions with his latest risque ballade.
Connaissez-vous l'histoire d'un vieux curé de Paris? D'un vieux curé de Paris. Il aimait la botanique, il en cultivait les fleurs. Il en cultivait les fleurs.
Joyce, the day we carried our 80 copies of two essays away from the printer, our first published works. The Day of the Rabblement by J.A. Joyce and A Forgotten Aspect of the University Question, The Unequal Treatment of Women by F.J.C. Skeffington. Everybody raved about your rambling piece with hazy references to Giordano Bruno, the heretic burned at the stake in Rome, with a dagger through his cheeks and a dagger through his jaw and tongue.
Knickerbocker kick. Tie him up. No rope? And use your rifle pull through. That'll teach the pacifist.
Tent station, Rathmines, 10 p.m. Easter Tuesday. We go out the gatepost and onto Rathmines Road. Three men on the far side.
Halt!
Captain gets us to rough them up, so they spread the word the army are out and we mean fucking business. One of them starts walking away.
Halt! Name?
James Cold.
Martial law's declared. Where are you at?
I was at an altar boys meeting in Rathmines Church. The captain shoots him in the head.
That's what we do to our enemies. We smite them, so the Bible's Book of Isaiah says. God save the king.
Our prisoner breaks free, but his hands are tied behind his back, so he falls to his knees and lays his head on the boy's chest. Then he starts to howl an atheist prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, will someone try to stop the blood?
The captain wrenches him up by the pull-through.
One more word out of you, Harry Jesus, and we'll call around to your wife in 10 Grosvenor Square. When she opens the door, I'll plug you in the head like I plugged him. And then we'll shoot her twice in the belly so she dies slowly in great pain. Because you're all up to your eyes in it. You are all our enemy, and we will smite you. God save the king! Eleventh station, Kelly's the second time, 11 p.m. Easter Tuesday. We have to keep prodding the prisoner because the swollen bollocks makes it hard for him to walk. The captain says if there's one bullet fired at us, plug Sheehy Skeffington. He throws a bomb into Kelly's and charges in with 10 men.
That shop is owned by the loyalist councillor, Kelly. You're attacking the wrong premises.
Of course you'd say that. You want all the cigars and wine for yourselves when you're in charge, securing your bloody assets.
Your captain's murdered once. He'll murder again. Are you going to just obey?
You've spoken without permission. Now your wife's going to get the works. Hannah the light. Hannah the word. Captain's back. Found another pair of rebel leaders in there. If this Harry Jesus is the next Chancellor of the Exchequer, these two are the Secretaries of Trade and Commerce. 12th station. The road back to Portobello. Midnight. Skeffy, I'm Dixon. They think I'm your rebel accomplice. I took your posters to print the proclamation of martial law on the bikes. I'll say you gave them willingly. I'll say it was your idea. That way we back each other up. I'm McIntyre. I know I've lampooned you in Starlight, Skeffy, several times, but bosses, orders, you know. As a journalistic professional, I know you understand. This captain's mixed the Starlight, the employer's paper I edit, with that red rag, the Spark. Skeffy, tell him I'm no friend of the Spark. I'd piss on it sooner. I'm the Starlight. Skeffy, I'm Dixon and I'm all for women's rights. I'm mad about women. I got engaged last week. Tell them I'm no rebel. Skeffy, why are you walking so slow, man? Speed up, they're prodding me. Why are you gone so fucking quiet? Hannah, my light. Hannah, my word. Hannah, my light. Hannah, my... Frank? Where are you? Frank, my crank. 13th station, Portobello Barracks, Wednesday. At 10 a.m, the captain told me to take Sheehy Skeffington, McIntyre and Dixon to the stoneyard. I did it. The captain told me to get 7 men with rifles. I did it. He told me to order the men to go to the wall. Go to the wall. Ready? Present. Fire! The 3 men fell. One of them still moved. Sheehy Skeffington. As a pacifist, I advocate no mere servile, lazy acquiescence in injustice. I want to see the age-long fight against injustice clothe itself in new forms, suited to a new age. I want to see the manhood of Ireland no longer hypnotized by the glamour of the glories of arms, no longer blind to the horrors of organized murder. We're on the threshold of a new era in human history. Nothing could be as it was before. The foundations of all things must be re-examined. Formerly, we could only imagine the chaos to which we were being led by the military spirit. Now we realize it. And we must never fall into that abyss again. I collected 4 of the men and I led them back to the stone yard. I told them to aim at the moving man. He looked at me and said,
"Lie of
fire!" And I fired a bullet in his head to make sure he was dead. Fourteenth station, Grosvenor Square, Rathmines.
sometime the following day.
Missus, I was sent by a soldier to say to give me a date. They're in a box on top of the high press for telling you that Harry Jesus is in Portobello Barracks. That's all.
Clip-clopping along to Glasnevin. Clip-clopping along to Glasnevin. Just a crate on a cart from Portobello Barracks to Glasnevin Cemetery.
What's in the crate, mister?
Head down. None of your fucking business.
Dear Colonel Maxwell, it has come to my attention that my son Francis Skeffington's body lies within the walls of Portobello Barracks. I request to be informed of the conditions requiring to be met for the transportation of my son's body for burial in consecrated ground. I assure you any conditions you might reasonably apply will be met by me with discreet compliance. For the sake of my son's immortal soul, I undertake not to inform Hannah Sheehy. Yours ever, J.B. Skeffington, Justice of the Peace.
Frank Sheehy Skeffington, pacifist, socialist, feminist, atheist, buried forever in shovelfuls of discreet compliance and historical heaps of scorn. As the clay thuds on the crate, Hannah and Owen are held at gunpoint. The captain orders 40 men to rifle through the flat. He raids Frank's study using the key he took from the blood-soaked pocket of the jaunty plus fours. James Connolly, facing the firing squad at dawn, asks for Skeffy to be made his literary executor. He'd know how to sell the publishing rights. To be told by Lily, they shot Skeffy, James. Tears pour down his face. Tears pour down. And James Joyce regales his Zurich companions, poised to become the most celebrated writer of the age. As my cloak starts to choke me, I Joycean thunder word again.
Look at the word and done under the scudi, Lucifer, my porter to the zoo, he's found a porter, porter, I'll get the cry, it's face, get back up.
Doors clang shut. As the clods of Glasnevin clay become a gigantic mound of collective forgetfulness. And our overseers parade their glorious pomposities with our medals of swaggering impotence pinned in their stiff lapels. And there's someone's got to do it looks of dogged duty. If you only knew, as we do, the sacrifices made by such as we of another time, that we might be free to parade here in sanctimonious panto-fucking mime. Where are the skeffies to make them afraid? Where are the cranks, small instruments that make revolutions? Where are the hairy Jesuses, the way, the lies, the truth, the frankness? The blue bottle's onto his intercom for backup. He has me shoved against the railings of Rathmines Tech, where Hannah used to teach. I see her there, at the door.
looking at me through her plain round specs. The way she must have looked at Sylvia Beach, the publisher of Ulysses, when she sold her Frank's 20 copies of two essays, which would go towards paying for Owen's education fees. The blue bottle rips the history sleeping bag off of me back and fucks it in a skip. "That's enough of that bollocksology," he says, as he cuffs me and shuts me up and puts me away in a paddy wagon for the greater security of all the 80 fucking M's of Ireland.